You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
The Blacklist is an annual survey of the most liked motion picture screenplays not yet produced. It has been published every year since 2005 by Franklin Leonard, who is a development executive who's worked at Universal Pictures and Overbrook. The website states that these are not necessarily the best screenplays, but rather the most liked, since it is based on a survey of studio and production company executives. Of the approximately 1,000 screenplays the Blacklist has included since 2005, nearly a third have later been produced as theatrical films, including Argo, American Hustle, Juno, The King's Speech, Slumdog Millionaire, Spotlight, The Revenant, The Descendants, Hell or High Water.
Wow.
The produced films off this list together have grossed $25 billion and have been nominated for 241 Academy Awards and 205 Golden Globe Awards, winning 48 and 40 respectively. As of the 92nd Academy Awards, three of the last 10 Best Picture Oscars went to scripts featured on the Blacklist, as well as 9 of the last 20 screenwriting Oscars have also gone to Blacklist screenplays. Writers whose scripts are listed often find that they are more readily hired for other jobs, even if their listed screenplays still have not been produced. So yeah, you'll want to see your screenplay on this list. And lucky for Alexander Felix, the screenplay for The Gateway was included on the 2013 Blacklist. 8 years later, this movie has been produced and released. It's about a social worker, played by the always wonderful Shea Whigham, assigned to care for the daughter of a single mother, played by Olivia Munn, intervenes when her ex-con husband returns from prison and immediately gets right back to his criminal ways working for his crime boss, played by Frank Grillo. Was it worth the 8 year wait to get to this final product? We are about to find out. I am TC DeWitt of the Screener Squad, and I am joined by Melina.
Hello.
Adrian.
Hello. I thought that was going to be like, what's the total number at the end of it? I was like, oh, damn, I don't know.
Oh, I was going to quiz you.
I lost track.
There will be a quiz at the end of this. I hope you took notes. And Miss Jordan's also with us as well.
You say Frank Grillo, but I think you really meant cowboy porn star, because what the fuck is he looking at?
That's him.
A very odd choice in his outfit. Yeah, I feel like he showed up and was like, I'm wearing this.
Also, I know St. Louis, Missouri has gotten some bad looks over the past, but even I can think, man, everything would be fine if everyone could just chill out and go to a Cardinals game together. I mean, that's just me.
I'd like to see you try to convince a Brewers fan to go to a Cardinals game.
Yeah.
You guys are speaking sports. I'm lost.
Listen, sports ball is not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about this movie that we did not have any banter before we started, really, to give me a sense of whether or not you three like this.
I like the premise. I really do. It feels like this 70s grindhouse. What happens when you take one step too far? It's like, I kind of have always wondered, how do fucking social workers deal with all this shit?
With a lot of drugs and a gun.
And just little, tiny, convenient, airplane-sized bottles of gin. Like, I'm pretty sure Tanqueray definitely actually helped put a small portion into the budget. I would not be surprised.
I was kind of hoping that at one point Shea Whigham would sit down in the bar that he frequents pretty much every night until he's blackout drunk and probably well beyond. And I was really hoping they'd pan over and there's Amy Adams' character from Sharp Objects, because man, I would love to see those two in a drink off.
How's it going?
from early on in the movie, I mean, like, the very first scene in the film, there was something about it that made me think, I think I'm really going to dig this. Because it's kind of shot with a hand camera. It also has this, like, really cool lighting in this intro scene that kind of sets up the type of character that Shea Whigham is and what he has to deal with day to day. And Jordan kind of hit it on the head. I wouldn't say it feels like a grindhouse film, but it definitely feels 70s. It reminds me a lot of, I'm not sure if any of you have ever seen the films of, I think kind of a controversial director, but one that I really dig, S. Craig Zahler, who's done Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Oh, yes.
And Dragged Across Concrete.
Yep.
And other movies that conservatives might like, even though they should not.
I do get it. Yeah. Well, more like a 70s sort of just grimy.
Yeah. I mean, like, if this was from the 70s, it'd be directed by Paul Schrader. Because it feels that grimy. It feels that dark. Unfortunately, that also comes with some of the lesser tropes that we've, like, moved past from the 70s. For instance, like, most of the female characters in this film are just abused and left to the wayside and are kind of a damsel in distress. But atmosphere that's trying to go with, I kind of like the griminess of it. It feels like it takes place in the same city that the Saw movies are in, except there's no Jigsaw stuff going on. It just feels like as icky.
It feels like it was lit by the same fluorescent lights that are in the cell scene from Saw. Like, every single scene in this movie felt like I was, like, every character was standing in a really bad truck stop bathroom because you could see every blemish, every scab. Oh, yeah, it was rough looking at people in this movie.
It really was. And I would also say it also feels a bit like something Sam Peckinpah, especially this one scene where the deal goes down, I should say, in this upper level of a department store that is, wow, there is so much to unpack. What the fuck is going on?
That's in the first half of the movie, and I don't feel it ever reached that height again after that point.
Well, because they pretty much came in and they were like, you know what? Remember that scene in The Dark Knight? Let's just do that.
Let's do every scene like this. Let's just have a quick random insert of lesbian fucking and just big bags of blow. I usually do stand up for Olivia Munn. I actually think she's a really good actress, but yeah, she's really not given much anything to do here. Or Taryn Manning, who's like one of the featured actresses. I think she has a whiff cred. I was like,
she's like a cameo. Basically.
Karen herself.
Yeah, I saw her name in the credits and I was like, oh, so this is going to be a white trash movie.
If it's her, it's redundant to say that.
Yeah.
Her scenes are just like superfluous, really.
They had to pad out that runtime. It's only a 90-minute
movie.
Yeah,
like her and fucking Detective Flash from Batman Begins.
Oh, it's Mark Boone Jr. playing the bartender.
Yeah,
who, I'm sorry, he's Bobby. He's always going to be Bobby from Sons of Anarchy, even in The Mandalorian. I'm like, you're space Bobby.
But Shea Whigham, yes, he's always just been a great, fantastic supporting actor, especially in Boardwalk Empire. But here, he's actually really the best part. One reason I signed up for this was to see, like, yes, Shea Whigham in a fucking leading role and in something like this.
Yeah.
And he's honestly really good. I truly buy into just this broken piece of shit.
There's only two scenes in this whole movie that he's not in.
Yeah.
This is his showcase of his talent. And it's such an odd thing that he's been around for so long in such great things, in such great roles, and yet he's not a household name.
It's great to see him as the leading man in this because he completely owns it, even to the end. Like, I think even his acting in, like, the very last scene is super good. Unfortunately, everyone else, except for a couple cameos that I don't want to mention, that I feel like they're equally on par with him. Everyone else is kind of not that good. I mean, like, the main antagonist, who's not Frank Grillo, by the way, which the synopsis says, like, all right, Shea Whigham is a social worker. This girl's father gets out of prison, and he's going to ruin stuff for the family. And it's like, oh, well, Frank Grillo's in the poster, so that's going to be Frank Grillo. And it's not Frank Grillo. It's some other lackey. And I'm sorry, I don't have his name pulled up on IMDb or anything like that.
Zach Avery's the actor. And
Zach Avery?
He's in a good portion of this movie. Frank Grillo has like three scenes, and he never leaves that bar.
I know.
Frank Grillo's another cameo.
It's like they had him for one day, and they were like, all right, we're going to give you three different outfits. Now cut, change, action.
Academy Award-winning Bruce Dern. Does more in this movie than Frank Grillo does.
Zach Avery, he is intimidating because you know what the stakes are, and obviously you don't want to see anything happen to this family, but in terms of his acting, he's kind of just okay. He kind of feels like a Batman-like thug, essentially.
He's just bland.
If you were to ask me who I think should replace Frank Grillo as the third person on the poster, at the beginning of the movie, I would have thought, well, Bruce Dern, just for the caliber of an actor like that.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't give it to Zach Avery, because despite the fact that he has significantly more screen time than Frank Grillo and Bruce Dern put together, I could barely even say he's really a character. He's a device.
Yeah.
He's a device who's basically just there to move the plot from point A to point B. He's there to be the motivation for Shea Whigham trying to help out Olivia Munn and her daughter get out from this situation. But he's playing it so one note through the whole thing that I was like, I can barely even see this guy as someone who's worth hating, because it's just such a rote and absolutely mundanely written smug-ass character.
He's really not interesting. And yeah, I kind of did forget about him.
Therein lies the problem for me. Mm-hmm. That this does have a good look to it, and I do think there's some good cast in here. Ultimately, from the page up, I felt lacking in a lot. And I don't know if different actors in these roles, giving the role to someone other than Olivia Munn, giving the role to someone other than Zach Avery, could have elevated the material far.
I doubt it, because they're not given a lot to do.
I still think Olivia Munn is a really good actress, and she does the best with what she's given here.
She basically, through the whole thing, is just the put-upon wife of a criminal who, from the moment we meet her, she's doing pretty irresponsible things herself that make it hard to endear yourself to her. And that never changes. She's never developed beyond that. And I thought that's how I felt with pretty much everybody in this, including Shea Whigham's character. He's good, but he's just piloting through a character that just feels so underwritten.
They squandered a good redemption arc with Olivia Munn's character. She could have rose above all of this and even her own bullshit to truly come around and just be this great mom. I thought that would have made for a really interesting arc playing against, you know, Shea Whigham's character, who is just so burned out.
Kind of the main problem with the movie, I would say, is that for every really good thing that it does, it just can't help itself but kind of fuck up in something. Like, we have that really, really great sequence when there's like a robbery and it's kind of setting up the rest of the film. And that's shot really well. It I don't think it's in one take, but it kind of looks.
They faked it to look
that
way.
You can see where the cuts are.
It looks good.
The editing was pretty seamless.
It's really good, like, set design. And it feels kind of out of nowhere, but it feels really cool. It feels almost Safdie-esque in, like, director probably really likes good time in those movies. Then it'll have, like, two other scenes of action where, for this dark, Paul Schrader-esque 70s-type film, the mood for these two action scenes was kind of dwindled by the soundtrack choice. One of these scenes just made it seem like, oh, this is a silly chase as opposed to something very tense. And then, unfortunately, another action scene is like the kind of the big climax. It could have been like really, really tense, like something out of Blue Ruin, if they just cut the soundtrack altogether. And you don't know, like, oh shit, you know, someone has a gun, someone doesn't. It's a survival. Mm-hmm. Yet they put in this music that kind of makes it seem like, I don't know, it just kind of seems silly, all things considered.
And I actually really like the soundtrack.
I like it aside from those two scenes.
Yeah, it seemed like that was their attempt to try to cover up the fact that there really wasn't much to those scenes. They're not particularly well shot. They're not even particularly memorable in the way that they're put together. I didn't feel the tension that I think they wanted us to feel. So as a result, I think it felt like they put the music in just to make you feel like, oh, well, they're just trying to be stylish. They're trying to be slick. And I was like, but that's definitely to the detriment of the scene actually feeling like we're supposed to be taking this seriously and not feeling like it's got its tongue in its cheek.
Well, Melina, why don't you piggyback off that and move into some of your final thoughts here?
Sure. I liked the beginning of this quite a bit. I liked the way that it was set up. I liked that everything feels like it's kind of got that very, it's like Hangover vision, the way that it's shot. Everything's grimy and lit very harshly. And I thought that worked. And then the second that they introduced Frank Grillo's character, I was like, this guy is a cartoon villain out of a completely different film. So many of these characters are given nothing to do. Bruce Dern is one of the great actors, and he's here to do nothing but to deliver three dumps of exposition, and that's it. This pretty much is exposition the movie. It's like, here we are with these characters in this point of their life, and we're just going to have people come in and out so that we can explain the various backstories, and then we'll just never see these people again. And it just felt kind of empty for that. I mean, even Keith David gets a scene in here, and you're like, oh, it's Keith David, we love you. And he's given nothing to do but be like, hey, remember this? Remember when that went down? Oh, man, that's just so tough. Everybody got that? Like, all right, I'm out. I actually really ended up not liking this at all, quite frankly. I thought that the characters were underwritten, underdeveloped, and not particularly likable. And that's too bad. I hope Shea Whigham, I hope this is not his last outing as a leading man, because I think that despite everything, he does do his damnedest, and it's great to see him. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 10 pork tacos.
Jordan?
There's plenty to really like with this movie, but it's just a bit of an uneven mess. Yeah, it's a really good idea of a screenplay, and yeah, I would kind of hope my screenplays one day end up on the blacklist, but I also hope they would turn out better as a finished product. Shea Whigham's great. I would recommend it for his performance alone. The movie is beautifully disgusting. It looks dirty, just grimy, and how the world looks through my hangovers. Just so constantly tired. I don't want to do anything. Just lay down and, I don't know, have another drink or get some Gatorade. And yeah, I hope there's more for Shea Whigham down the line. He definitely deserves it after, you know, helping carry the load in other productions. I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10 car stereos that aren't worth that much fucking trouble.
Oh, Jesus.
Just get one of those Bluetooth transmitters, all right?
Yeah, for real.
It's cheaper. And
this was written in 2013, so...
Really?
Car Damn. Stereos were a lot different back then.
Even then, I don't think that would have been worth that much.
No wonder that kid's playing Fruit Ninja.
Yeah, go ahead, Adrian.
So, this movie had the potential to be something great, but I did think it was something pretty good. I actually did end up liking the movie, and a big part of that is because we get Shea Whigham in this grimy 70s Paul Schrader-esque character. This feels like one of those like kind of wannabe Taxi Driver type films, and I like those. Like I said, I really like the films of S. Craig Zahler, but I feel like those are way elevated compared to something like this. This felt like it still kind of had trappings of a first-time director. But I'm still looking forward to whatever this guy is going to do next, because there was some like little nuggets of like something real magical in here. Like I said, like some of the lighting is really great, the way it's filmed. And then I think some scenes are really cool. I just think some scenes aren't as cool. However, we finally completed the trilogy of, I don't even know what to call it. I guess the gritty trilogy of films that you've never heard of and never seen from 2021. There's Flinch, there's The Birthday Cake, and now there's The Gateway. I can't explain it. They all fit together. They all feel like they were an homage to something from the past. And I feel like if you saw it at a triple feature, you'd be like, wait, which one was which? But they're all kind of fun. And ultimately, that's kind of how I felt about this. It was entertaining, and it was a bit of a throwback. I just needed it to be a little better. That being said, I'm going to give this, Melina, you said, 3 pork tacos. I'm going to give this 3 tacos de carne asada de 5, which is 3 carne asada tacos out of 5.
That sounds delicious.
Now I'm hungry.
Well, let me get to my final thoughts here. I used to visit my girlfriend's parents' house, and her dad would always be watching some movie. And I'd spend a few minutes trying to guess what it was, because it usually had some recognizable faces in it. So I would think that maybe it was a popular enough movie that I just hadn't got around to seeing yet, but it usually ended up being some Redbox movie that I never would have guessed or wanted to see. I bet my girlfriend's dad is going to love this movie. It's got a nice grime to it. The production design and direction are competent, and the score and the soundtrack are cool, but for me, it commits one of the worst sins of a film. It's boring. Shea Whigham is great and giving it his all, but that's it. I don't care about any of these characters. I don't care what happens to them. I don't think any of the actors are inherently bad, but they just aren't offering up anything. And that falls on the script. And I hate to bash a screenwriter, because that's what I am. And I get how hard it is to get in the business. But this feels like a TV show in its third season that somehow has an audience, despite me not knowing a single person who's ever even heard of it. So maybe this movie will find that audience, and maybe I'm just tired of crime drama, but this did not do it for me. It's not bad, it's just dull. It's middle of the road, and I'm going to give it 4 out of 10 drug mule daughters.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. Wow.
Gonna end on a comedic bit. Yep.